Hi.
You go first.
Okay, hi, I'm Jim Pinkerton.
And I'm David Korn.
And together, we're bloggingheads.tv, back again.
Boy, we could synchronize that. After all the times we've done this, Jim, you think we'd get it right.
I think we need better production.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this may even be an abbreviated version of our usual blogging at TV, because I know you're a very busy guy, and I am too. Okay. So let me just jump into this with you then. You know, the big news of the week is... Mrs. Clinton.
Right.
We go from, after Pennsylvania, this is, she's going to win, or she's close to winning. She's back in it. She's queen of Pennsylvania. And then she has a loss in North Carolina and a narrow one in Indiana. And all of a sudden, it's see you later. Tim Russert, on MSNBC, even before they finish counting the votes in Indiana, I can tell you who the Democratic nominee is going to be. And it's going to be a he, not a she. I mean, so she's been counted out.
But you would agree, David, you're part of the process, right? Your headline on Mother Jones of, like, damn the pundits?
Full speed ahead.
Right,
damn
so
the pundits, full speed ahead.
I think you captured something about the nature of the process now, which is that, last time I counted, it's something like, 49% of all the voters in a two-party race are for Hillary. That counts as a pretty close election.
Right.
And Obama's far below what it takes to actually win. And so it seems to me there's plenty of campaigning left. And yet, the entire pundital class has pretty much, they followed your leader, you followed their leader, or you're all thinking the like-minded thought of, how can we drive Hillary Clinton out of the race as soon as possible? Right, David?
Well, I don't say how we can drive Hillary out of the race. I was on the conference call earlier this week with the Clinton campaign, and I asked them, are they pursuing anything other than a nullification strategy by which they have superdelegates vote against the way the vote turns out in the primaries and caucuses?
Now, why is that nullification? Because for some of our younger blogging heads, TV readers, listeners, viewers might not know that...
Absorbers.
That nullification is an incredibly loaded phrase, and I'm sure David chose with care to refer to the political theories of John C. Calhoun, who was probably not his favorite political theorist, in which John C. Calhoun said, if the Yankees want to do anything to eradicate slavery, we'll nullify it.
Well, what I was thinking was what a jury does when it doesn't like the case a prosecutor brings, which is to nullify it. It's concept. It's not just a political concept. It's a concept, I think, going back to English law.
Right, but the point is, it's not a legal proceeding. We're in a political proceeding here.
Yes. Legislative proceeding.
Right. Why is it the case that the superdelegates exercising their right to small-d democracy... Why would that be nullification as opposed to simply deliberation in the...
Well, that's... Jim, you work for Huckabee. I think the Hillary campaign could use you right now. The point is, it would be nullifying the will of the people who voted. Now, yes, it's a close election. I've been saying that all along. It's kind of a 50-50 election, except, fortunately for Hillary, it's actually a 51-49 election when she's on the downside of that equation. So can the party... by way of insiders and elders, whatever you want to call them, voting against the way the primaries and caucuses turn out, end up giving the nomination to the person who came in second after all that campaigning. Now, there is no doubt at this point in time, there is no doubt that she will be behind in pledged delegates, and also now, it seems, in popular vote, even if you include those ghost voters of Florida. Even if you give Hillary those, she still can't, make up the difference here in the elections left, kind of small states, and, she's not going to have 90-10 blowouts in any one of them. So that being the case, the only argument her campaign has now is to go to the superdelegates and say, we are the better candidate, despite what those voters thought, we are the better candidate to go up against John McCain in the fall.
Yeah,
and so you should nullify the... will of the voters. That was my
point. To put it another way, use your own best judgment.
Use your own best judgment to nullify the will.
Or simply to pick the most electable Democrat in November.
This is not either or. But who you think it? Into the realm of nothing but opinion.
Right. But tell me this, David. What was the purpose of the superdelegates? Where did they come from?
They came from years of wrangling amongst, you know, Democrats who every 5-10 years, or even shorter sometimes, have these internal debates over party rules.
Right. And what was the whole, correct me if I'm wrong. The whole theory of the superdelegates was exactly this.
Well,
if the party rank and file is hijacked by the left, we want moderate, elder statesmen, experienced heads, politicos, whatever, to overrule them.
Well, you know, they haven't done it to date, and I'm not sure they even thought through. They may have wanted the right to do so, but I'm not sure they thought through the consequences of doing so, particularly in the sort of dynamics we have now. You know, a popular guy who places first by playing by the rules. Now, they, you know, the other part of my piece, which you cite, is that I basically said she could only, you know, follow this nullification strategy, in essence, by going nuclear. I mean, this would tear.
You wouldn't say that's a loaded word, would you?
Well, of course. In case you haven't noticed yet, Jim, you and I are political columnists. We're not pastors.
Your phrases, nullification and nuclear, intended to provoke the response that you want to achieve in your listeners.
Well, listen, in Washington, it's become a bit of a cliche now to say going nuclear. The nuclear option, blowing up the filibuster with judicial nominations. Remember that?
Right. Yeah. So. Who called it that? Was it the opponents or the proponents?
I don't know who.
I'm pretty sure it was the opponents.
Who drive it? But. As someone who is against the dropping of the bomb at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, I feel well entitled to use this worn-out cliche in Washington politics. I've paid my dues. But in any event, I mean, I think, you know, do you have any doubt? Do you doubt for a moment that if the superdelegates, following their own best judgment, you know, voted this way and took the nomination away from the guy who came in first and gave it to Hillary, that would not lead to, you know, speaking of it, a civil war within the party?
Jim. I'm sure you're right. I'm sure, and that's why I'm sure the superdelegates will be in the end happy enough to vote for Obama. Not that they think he has much of a chance of winning the general election, but because they want the internal peace and quiet. They don't want to have their homes in DuPont Circle in Cleveland Park. Toilet paper or egged by, activists.
When was the last time that even happened?
Well, I don't know. They don't want to see it. They don't want to know. I mean, look, obviously
the Republicans who live in Alexandria.
These supra democratic mechanisms don't get called into place very time. For example, the Electoral College, which is sort of a superdelegate, if you will, equivalent add-on to democracy, never had to choose a presidential candidate who did not win the electoral count, who did not win the popular vote until 1824. Our first presidential election, I guess, was 1789, and the first time it was the nullification, to use your phrase, was invoked was 1824. So 35 years later, the superdelegates, as I recall, came in the wake of Mondale, when the Democratic elders said, "Look,
well, there were superdelegates before then." They've been rejiggering. I actually sat through a lecture on this recently, and someone asked me for the details, but they've been rejiggering this. You know, ever since.
The big discussion said we need to keep the party from being hijacked by the left-wing crazies was after Mondale's defeat of 49 states in the 1984 election.
Wait. I don't think Mondale was considered, you know, a left-wing crazy. If memory serves,
by
Democrats, in fact.
No, not by Democrats, but the Democrats got 41% of the vote. Mondale was perfectly reasonable. Mondale? Who wouldn't like
Mondale? It was not auction. A lot of this was also to just in terms of political patronage to reward the state delegates and state committee people who, you know, who actually work for nothing, giving them a shot in the process. It was really it was certainly not designed, I think, to weigh in the way that Hillary would like it to weigh in at this point in time.
I think that's a genuine point of difference between us. We'll just leave it at that. And we couldn't possibly settle it by yelling at each other.
Let's give it a try. But bottom line here, I mean, put aside your Republican strategist cap. Do you think there's any way that the party could survive an action such as that?
No, I don't. I think that's why they'll give it to Obama. But again, I repeat, they don't think Obama's going to win. They just figure it's easier this way. Look, the Democratic Party will continue to flourish at the congressional level and the gubernatorial level. Frankly, especially if Obama is not president.
Well, just remember,
McCain wins in 2010. in primary 2008, then the Democrats have a lot to look forward to in the 2010 midterms. Conversely, the Republicans have a lot to dread.
Jim, just remember, as in the election, in the fall, in the general election, we're not going to be talking about this. We're going to be talking about two things, the economy and the war.
No, I don't think so. I think that's what you'll be talking about. I think the voters will be having their own ideas, of what to, and including the nature of Obama and his associates and his friends and his political beliefs. I think those will be major, major topics, and you might not like it, but the voters get to decide these things for themselves.
Well, fine. Well, we'll talk about one of McCain's associates later on in the show. How's that for a tease? But before we jump to that segment, let me bring up a fellow Republican of yours, Newt Gingrich, who actually has a different view than you do. Hard to believe, I know. He wrote a piece for Human Events a day or two back, in which he basically said, Republicans, wake the hell up.
He does have a different view.
Wait. There are two parts to one is that he thinks that the Republicans, the congressional Republicans, are walking into a thresher, that they're about to be completely obliterated, as Hillary might say, destroyed. But what he's saying is they're going to take down John McCain with them. That, you know, if they're 32% at the polls, he says John McCain can't survive that. So usually the argument is the guy at the top may be a drag on the ticket. In this case, Newt is making the argument that the brand itself, the Republican brand, will destroy the congressional Republicans and be an albatross around John McCain's neck that he may not be able to survive. Fortunately, though, he has a prescription. Can you fancy that, Newt Gingrich having an idea?
10 points is there.
I think only 9 this time. You know, he's getting more compact as he gets older and wiser, I suppose. He wants the Republicans and Congress to get together, have a meeting, and come out for bold, real change. And of course, he has an idea what this bold, real change should entail. There are 9 points. One is the gas tax holiday that already seems to be an old idea. One is putting more oil into the National Petroleum Reserve. One is to introduce a more energy at lower cost with less environmental damage and greater national security bill, basically a weaker global warming bill. One is to have earmark moratoriums for 1 year. And then the other is to cut the Census Bureau budget. Americans really, I think, are talking about...
I think his point was make it efficient. If the bureaucrats can't do it, turn it over to some private vendor.
Sure a lot of people at the kitchen table are worrying about the inefficiencies at the Census Bureau. Implement a space-based GPS-style air traffic control system. I like it. Beam me up, Scotty.
If
it works, declare English the official language of government, which will help Latino voters in Nevada and New Mexico. I'm all for that. Help Republicans with Latino voters. I was being facetious. And protect the workers' right to secret ballot. That's another union bashing bill. And the ninth point, which is kind of my favorite, remind Americans that judges matter.
I agree probably with almost all of those.
But do you think that if Republicans get out there and started he doesn't even mention the tax cuts. He mentions really nothing big about the economy. And, of course, missing from his 9 points is anything about the war and national security.
I think as I recall, 3 of those concerned energy.
But nothing about foreign policy, nothing about Iran.
I think the reality of the big driver of our foreign policy and the reason we're in such a one of the reasons we're in such a mess in the Middle East is our heavy dependence on foreign oil. And I think
you're one of these no blood for oil guys.
I'm one of those energy. Let's stop giving the Saudi Arabians $200 billion of our money so they can spend it on madrasas in Pakistan. Sunni extremists in Iraq, and God knows what else they're spending it on.
But do you really think that these 9, in the time between now and November, if the Republicans got together and tomorrow announced Contract for America, version 2.0, and had these points, remind Americans that judges matter, and the Census Bureau, that the American public would wake up and say, hey, that Republican brand? Not as lousy as I thought it was.
Well, I think a few points. First of all, Newt was mostly talking about the Congress. I mean, I think he was saying, it could hurt McCain, but I think he also said pretty clearly, and I think this is what a lot of like what I think at least, and I think a lot of, I'm not alone in this, is that McCain is pretty likely to win a sort of lonely victory at the presidential level. And the voters will say, look, Obama and Bill Ayers and Reverend Ryder are just too much. We're not going to vote for him. He's just too much of a McGovern. And then to kind of cover themselves, if you will, they'll vote Democratic for Congress. They will split their tickets. This is exactly what happened in 1972. And it's even what happened in 1984, when both of those elections, the right. Democrats had a net gain, repeat gain, in the middle of those disastrous presidential landslides mm-hmm. of two Senate seats yes. in both cases. So I think that the fear is that, you know, it'll be President McCain and, you know, 56 Democratic senators and 240 Democrats in the House, which, again, is why I think the superdelegates are going to be so happy to let Obama get the nomination, because they've proven over and over again that they can survive these landslides, that they're sufficiently adroit in their own local districts, whether it's Florida or Washington State or anywhere else in between, that they can say, listen, vote for me, I'm a good guy, I'm a good person, I'm a good woman, and ignore the top of the ticket. That's been the Democrats' formula for holding the majority in Congress for the bulk of the last 60 plus years. Now, but Newt, who is basically a creature of Congress, first and foremost in terms of orientation and loyalty, is making a good point to Republicans that, look, precisely because McCain is likely to win, and precisely because the Democrats are likely to benefit from the backlash against McCain, that sort of remorse that they'll feel, because it's not that they love McCain, it's just that they fear Obama, we congressional Republicans, have to take dramatic steps to create an identity other than earmarks, pork barrel, and Bush rubber stamping. And I think if you can begin the discussion among Republicans, listen, we do need a 9-point plan or a 10-point plan, and we can argue about what the 10 points ought to be, but I certainly think a lot of those, I think the judge issue, if one were to study, you know, the record of Barack Obama as a Chicago activist and the left-wingers he was hanging out with, like Bill Ayers, who's pictured on Steve Clemens' blog, a Democratic blogger stomping on the American flag, and then people say, well, yeah, we want to make sure that the next bunch of judges are a lot more like John Roberts and Samuel Alito,
I think it's pretty
than whatever left-wing crazy Obama would nominate.
Jim, you keep bringing Bill Ayers into this. You know, guys he hangs
Obama's
out with.
Obama's boss at the foundation.
They work together. They're on the board. They share the board with the foundation.
Okay.
I mean, are you responsible for boards that you sit on? Are you responsible for everybody who's and everything they did in the past?
Are you about to go after McCain for a church he attended?
I am about to go after McCain for an endorsement he sought.
Okay, fair enough. You're about to go for
I'm about to go after McCain for an endorsement.
All right, fine, let's go to that. Let's go there right now.
No, bring it on. I'll get to it in a second. This is one of the, but it's Newt who says the grave danger for McCain is that the GOP will ultimately outweigh McCain's personal appeal and drag his candidacy into defeat.
It's possible.
You know, the Republican brand has been
possible,
so badly
damaged.
But not
likely, that's all. I don't agree with damage on that. I think
let's just, he's not saying that. You're saying that. I just want our absorbers out there to be clear on the difference here. Let's go to segment three.
Let's go to your desperate attempt to breathe some life into Obama's otherwise doomed McGovernite campaign.
We'll see. Do you think Obama can't win almost every state that John Kerry won?
I think he'll likely lose 40 states.
40 states?
40, 4-0.
I'll take that bet.
Okay.
How much?
I don't know. We're not going to study relevant. But look, believe me, if I'm wrong about this, the enormous blogging heads community will scourge me and rake me up with the coals. So you owe me money for the bet that we had on something else.
We didn't make it.
But you said I'll give money to your favorite.
Bob
Wright, the grandmaster of Blogging Heads TV. I remember now. Thanks to Bob Wright. I predicted that we haven't heard anywhere close to having heard the last of Reverend Wright. Like a month ago or 6 weeks ago, whenever it was, and you said, "Oh no, that's ridiculous. He's going to sink into the woodwork." And of course, then he went to the National Press Club.
And that was the same conversation in which you called Obama nothing but a skinny Al Sharpton.
I think that's more and more clear as time goes by that that's his background.
It's not his background.
Well, I think it is.
I mean, this guy did community organizing. Yeah. He was a, you know, he was a professor at Torch School. I mean, it's not, he's not the racial provocateur.
Bill Ayers is a professor.
You know,
Bruce Franklin was a professor. He was out there in the hills,
now,
machine gunning.
You tell me why. You explain to me why serving on the board with Bill Ayers is a closer relationship than what I'm about to describe.
Okay, well, let's just make sure everybody knows who Bill Ayers is. Bill Ayers is an SES radical. Weather Underground. Forgive me. These doctrinal distinctions get lost.
It's not a doctrinal decision. But go ahead.
He's a Weather Underground, which is, in most people's reckoning, violent terrorists. And then not only did Ayers do it in the '60s, but then he basically never stopped saying, you know, we should blow up more stuff. And,
what did
he do,
Jim?
I don't know. He blew up things.
What he did a couple of times, and I don't condone it, but you got to get the facts straight here.
Yeah.
What he did was he blew up buildings after determining there was nobody in there.
Okay, that's nice.
Okay, okay, so you want to compare him to a, you know, to when you use the word terrorist.
He's not Bin Laden. I'll give you that.
But what's
striking is that he's now probably 60 or in his 60s at least, and is now photographed stomping on the American flag. I mean, I'm telling you, David, look, honest to God, I'm not so in love with Republicans that I want the Democrats to become so unpatriotic that they can't win a national election anymore, because I think it's unhealthy for our small-d democracy to have that happen. But if the Democrats can't see that these kinds of people, like Reverend Wright and Bill Ayers, are completely toxic.
Reverend Wright served 6 years in the Marines. How many did you serve? How do you question his patriotism?
I question his patriotism. I admire him for 6 years in the Marines.
Well, how do you
disagree with him when he says, "God damn America."
But wait a second. You can disagree with him. I wouldn't, use those words. But you're questioning his patriotism. He said, "Goddamn America," because America was locking up black men disproportionately because of the disparity in sentencing between God.
Benedict Arnold was at one time an American patriot who became an anti-American patriot. Yeah. Became a traitor to his country. I mean, there's plenty of people who were good and then went bad. I would put Reverend Wright in that category.
I don't question. You know, I think it was the wrong thing to say, but I don't question Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson's patriotism when they say God has damned America because of abortion and that's why we had 9/11. It's not a patriotism question.
Now, I think there's a slight difference between what you interpret God as having done. Because, I mean, look, disasters happen, earthquakes happen, and if you have a theological turn of mind, you might say, why did this earthquake occur, this flood or disaster or plague or Holocaust or whatever.
And obviously because of gay people.
Well, I mean, it's an argument that I don't agree with, but there's a difference between the flat. If something bad happens, then you have a right to say, well, why does this happen?
God has damned America.
But the point is, what's different, though, is to make the blanket statement, God damn America.
Yeah.
And by the way, nobody's going to elect Falwell president either. I think that the problem that Obama has, and he'll never recover from this, you want to talk about jobs in the Iraq war.
I bet you could find lots of abolitionists at one time or another who said, God damn America for slavery.
But it doesn't mean you don't win an election.
No. Okay.
The abolitionist
listen,
never won.
Listen, there's a political issue here. I'm arguing you the policy, the ideas issue. Now, I know how things can be used politically as well as you do, and I know that it's a political problem. But to say, I won't sit here and call Reverend Wright unpatriotic because of that terminology.
Okay, well, you're from Obama anyway, so what's the problem here? I'm just saying that swing voters won't.
I'm saying that I don't want to see my good friend Gene Pinkerton fall into the gutter of political demagoguery.
Even though we realize that
there are political demagogues out there and that political demagoguery does work.
Look, the left has this problem. The left basically can't conceive that people would vote on their moral, political, patriotic assumptions at the expense of their economic condition, or heaven forfend, what might happen to the polar bears and the penguins, so they're endlessly the Tom Franks of the world are endlessly mystified and infuriated as to how this happens, and they conclude that religion and culture and tradition and Rush Limbaugh have bamboozled people in the voting against their proper class interests.
And
the Obama campaign epitomizes that analysis, and I think it's going to lead to a comeuppance in November.
It's a gross overstatement to ascribe that thinking to everybody left of center.
You're right, it is a gross overstatement, but it is nonetheless a true statement.
No, it isn't.
Well, I think it is.
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
But let me go back then to this point.
But go ahead. Okay. Let's hit me with Reverend Parsley. Let's do him.
I'll go to Reverend Rod Parsley. You're running for president. You're a Republican. You want the endorsement of a popular pastor in a swing state, Ohio, and you seek it out. You campaign with him. You call him a moral compass. You call him a great leader. You call him a spiritual guide. Those are all things that John McCain has done regarding Reverend Rod Parsley. Now, when Parsley's not campaigning with John McCain and endorsing him and saying people should vote for him, he's giving sermons. And several times he has done sermons in which he has basically called on the United States to destroy the religion of Islam. He calls Islam the greatest religious enemy of our civilization and the world, and that it is the historic mission of America to see that this false religion is destroyed. So my question is, why is it unreasonable to ask the candidate, John McCain, to say, you should distance yourself from this hate monger who has said that all Islam, not just Muslim extremists, he says Islam itself is wrong and ought to be eradicated, destroyed, wiped off the books. Why? Because it's a demon religion, because Allah was really the satanic spirit speaking to Muhammad, and we should not have mosques in this country. We should not have any diversity. We should not have any understanding of this other religion. We should just destroy it. Now, someone who speaks in those terms, he's put in his book, he's put it on in his sermons, and we at Mother Jones and Brave New Films got a copy of one of these sermons, and we posted a video with excerpts of it. I think it will blow your mind, as Rod Parsley likes to say during his own sermons. This is going to freak you out, he says a lot. In any event, why should a straight talker, a guy who wants to be the leader of all Americans, who wants to actually be a leader throughout the world, get in bed with a fellow who wants to destroy the religion of millions of people throughout the planet?
Billions. I suspect billions. McCain will denounce those comments.
He hasn't.
I bet he will.
Well, he has.
Until he does.
As you know, we broke this story. Actually, I'll say I broke this story in March when I got a hold of Parsley's book. McCain, you know, wouldn't take any questions from us on this when he was asked about it by other reporters. His campaign only said, well, he doesn't endorse Parsley's view just because he accepts his endorsement. And since then, he has said nothing through all the coverage of this. Now we're going to ramp it up a bit with video, but he has yet to say anything about it.
Well, as somebody who believes in separation of church and state, and that you are rightly judged by your associations, I think this is a serious issue for McCain, and he should say, in the strongest terms, that he doesn't agree with his fellow on these things.
Well,
I bet you he does.
There's a political wrinkle here, and that is Parsley has been credited by some with winning Ohio for Bush in 2004. He registers social conservatives in Ohio, a critical swing state, as you know, and he gets them to the polls. So he, and his church itself, I think, has about 8,000 parishioners. So it's probably no overstatement to say he's responsible for several tens of thousands of, you know, loyal Republican voters in Ohio. And it's hard to see McCain winning. Even though you think Obama's going to lose, you know, 40 states, most people believe Ohio still is going to be important for either side to win. So might it be politics that's keeping John McCain from talking straight about this guy?
It's possible. You might be right, but I just point out to you that McCain has, I think, been pretty good about denouncing
not John Hagee.
Those like the, you know, like the radio talk show host in Cincinnati.
But he hasn't with John Hagee.
I think he will. I think the only question remaining, I find all these statements to be beyond the pale. Personally, and I think the question is the level of connection between Obama and Reverend Wright and and McCain and Hagee and Parson.
No, I'll grant that. Obama has a closer connection to Wright than McCain has
right.
to Hagee. But they're different. They're different relationships. That's his pastor with Hagee and Parsley. These are political allies that McCain has sought and is using to succeed politically. So he's gone out to round up these folks. And, you know, and to try to use them for his own political
advantage.
And
you don't suppose there's any political bent in Obama joining the Trinity United Church of Christ back in the 80s?
I have no idea why he joined. Is there a do you make a political
decision
when
you go to church?
I do. I
think it was a big mega church, and he was an activist and an organizer, so it was a great place to join. It's possible.
Impossible. But nevertheless, I'm not, you know, it's certainly not apples to apples. I'm not even sure it's apples to pears. I'm looking at the McCain situation in and of itself.
I think you raise a good point. I mean, hats off to Mother Jones is a great publication. You guys are doing lots of good scoops. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, I'm not being ironic.
We often work with the New America Foundation, where you're affiliated. So
okay, and I mean, look, the you know, I give you credit. I mean, it's sort of amazing to me how much, as a former opposition researcher back in a previous going back, you know, decades. I've been struck, just as a matter of professionalism, if this Reverend Wright videotape stuff had come out, you know, 6 months ago.
Well, it did. I mean, Wright was known as a problem. I think actually, you know, there were a couple rounds of the story. Then
as you'll probably demonstrate with the Reverend Parsons
stuff.
Yeah, the
videotape made a difference.
If you have the videotape of, you know, goddamn America, I think that came out like March, like 12th or 13th or something like that. Now, if that had come out in December. Something tells me, Obama wouldn't be the nominee right now. So I'm sort of amazed. I mean, I think it'll be interesting. Since obviously you're a great journalist and a digger, I mean, perhaps we can find out somehow why it was that these videotapes of Reverend Wright, which I guess has been in existence for years.
I think what happened was Fox News went to the church store and bought.
But why wasn't anybody doing that a year ago?
That's a real good question.
Where were the Hillary Clinton opposition researchers?
That's a good question.
That's what I'm curious about.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, from a journalistic perspective, I see things all the time that people do, and I go, you know, journalists, I go, darn, why didn't I think of that? It was pretty damn obvious at the time.
Right.
You know, go to the church, you know, and just see what they have. Because I've done this with others in the past. You know, church bookstores are great sites of information on a religion, on a particular pastor, on John Hagee or anybody else you want. And it's where they sort of are, you know, selling things that usually are taped, you know, within the church or a pamphlet or something, in which they're not, you know, they realize they're not speaking on Fox to a mainstream audience, but they're speaking to the flock, and they are more free with what they actually believe. So church stores are a wonderful source of information for journalists.
So all those aspiring political activists out there in blogging has land, take note here.
Yes, I'm giving away a big tip.
Get thee to a
church store.
A church nunnery or church storery or something.
Well, I think that's about all the time we have. But before I go, I mean, is there anything that you've been writing about or working on that you want to plug?
No, the only thing I've just... I have a piece in Reason Magazine, or Reason.com, I guess, probably more precise. I'm not really, it's hard to know anymore what actually gets published and what's online, in which I discuss the history of the libertarian movement from the perspective of 2058. And I say, here's how the libertarian movement fell apart in the first decade of the 21st century, and the examples I used were 9/11, which is a very... You know, de-libertarianizing event, the McCain-Feingold, the Sarbanes-Oxley, corporate legislation, the rise of Google. I mean, I picked three or four events as indicators of what we're going to come along to kibosh freedom in the early part of the 21st century. And I think that all of those, including myself, who put a great premium on personal freedom and personal liberty. Need to be aware that the trends running against personal freedom and liberty and human expression are extremely strong now. It's not so much a left or right thing, it's sort of a technological thing. The ability now of the government to surveil us is so much greater and so much more powerful now.
And it's not just the government.
It's not just the government. I agree.
As we showed here at Mother Jones.
And I agree. And so I, that is something I'm sure we can provide a link not only to the article I wrote, but also I did a video thing with Nick Gillespie over at Reason, just up the street, just yesterday, and I'm sure that will be online quick enough. And so I might as well thank you, David, for letting me give a plug to that.
In a sentence, if you can, if that's possible, Bob Barr running for president on the Libertarian ticket?
Looks better and better to me.
And what do you think?
I mean, he won't win.
Listen, Jim, don't go out on the limb here, okay? You already said Obama's going to lose 40 states. I don't want you to get out there with another one. Bob will not win.
But I think that, as with Ron Paul, I mean, look,
does he take votes away from Republicans?
I think that a close look at the Ron Paul money raising and so on. I mean, his best money raising. Now, admittedly, money is not the same as votes. Where places like, you know, San Francisco and Austin, Texas.
Right.
I think that the sneaky phenomenon, I've written about this in the past, is that much of the left now is basically sort of, you know, libertarian in their own orientation. You know, they come out of the 60s and empowerment and power to the people and so on and so on, and sort of, you know, they want to smoke pot. And they go from not wanting the cops to catch them smoking pot to not wanting the cops to catch them not paying their income taxes. And there's a reason why, you know,
are you saying people on the left don't pay their income taxes?
I'm sorry?
You're saying people on the left don't want
to
pay?
No, I'm saying libertarians don't want to pay income taxes. And so you might have been, you know, cheering for Che Guevara in the 60s, but by the time the 90s and the O's have rolled around, you're a lot more conscious of maximizing your income than you are maximizing the victory of Bolivian peasants.
You're saying libertarians generally are former lefties who want to hang on to more of what they got.
No, I'm saying that much of the left, the political left in America, has moved in a distinctly libertarian direction. Free trade, open borders. A basic realization that markets work.
The left is against NAFTA.
Much of the left is for NAFTA. Bill Clinton was a modern radical.
Bill Clinton triangulated against the base of his party.
You're right. I mean, look, the left is confused on this. Obviously,
the base of the left is always taking the same position on NAFTA.
Much of the left. Much of the Democratic Party has totally bought in to some variant on free trade, some variant auctioning of spectrum.
That's not a majority position within
the... I said much of.
Some have, but actually...
The economic advisors to both Clinton and Obama are basically free traders, as far as I can tell. Austin Goolsbee and all the people around Hillary. And so, now, the candidate might have changed. I think one of the things that hurt them both was that nobody really believes them.
Okay, well, I asked for a short answer from Bob Barr. But just tell me, get back to that.
I don't think Bob Barr will do very well, but I think he will, as with Ron Paul, get a lot of attention, because a lot of people, including in San Francisco and the Research Triangle and New York City and other liberal hotbeds, will say, yeah, he makes a lot of sense.
Do you think he could be a Ralph Nader for the right in terms of taking votes away from Republicans?
Possible. It just depends on how good a campaign he runs and how much money he raises. But I think he'll get a lot of money.
And I think
he'll run a pretty good campaign.
Well, I hope he has a campaign fundraiser where he puts a whipped cream on the. Remember, you got in trouble for that, putting whipped cream on the private parts of a server or someone who jumped out of a cake.
You can
Google it.
Some research researcher can come up with this. Anyway,
Jim, it's always great talking to you.
Thanks, David.
And I'll see you soon.
Very good. Bye-bye.